every single day. Retail traders incinerate millions of dollars of capital just staring at a ticking clock.
Yeah, they're basically looking at chronological trivia.
Right. They look at a 5-minute or, you know, a 15-minute vertical volume bar on the bottom of their ES chart and genuinely believe they're analyzing market structure. But they aren't.
No, not at all. Knowing that 10,000 contracts traded between, say, 10:00 and 0:00, 10:05 a.m., it tells you absolutely nothing about the actual battlefield of an auction market. It is just noise.
Exactly. To see where institutional money is trapped, where it's aggressively entering, or where true fair value is established, you have to completely shift your perspective.
You really do.
You have to take that volume histogram and, well, physically turn it sideways.
Right. And when you rotate that data to the y-axis, you fundamentally change the question you're asking the market.
Because you stop asking when the activity happened.
Exactly. You start asking at which prices the participants actually committed their capital. I mean, the futures market is just an ongoing, continuous two-way auction.
Its sole mechanical purpose is facilitating trade between buyers and sellers.
Right. So by mapping volume directly to price, you strip away that temporal illusion. You reveal the actual structural footprint of the market.
Because standard limit orders, the resting orders waiting in the book, those can be pulled in milliseconds.
Oh, constantly. The DOM, the depth of market showing those resting orders, it is routinely spoofed by large players just flashing fake liquidity.
But executed volume at a specific price is immutable.
It is. Once a contract exchanges hands, it's permanently printed. It's really the only metric of true market intent that that cannot be manipulated.
So before we talk about how to actually trade off this data, we need to map the terrain.
Sure.
If standard time-based volume is just a stopwatch, I tend to look at the volume profile as a topographical heat map.
That's a great way to visualize it.
When I pull up this profile, I see these massive fat clusters of volume bulging out, and then right in between them, these incredibly thin gaps where price just seemingly fell through the floor.
Right, the mountains and the valleys.
Yeah, exactly. So what dictates the shape of this terrain? And where do we even anchor our focus to begin with?
Well, your absolute anchor is the POC, the point of control.
Okay.
This is the single price level that facilitated the highest number of executed contracts during your chosen period. It represents ultimate consensus.
So out of every price available, the POC is the exact equilibrium where buyers and sellers were most comfortable doing heavy business.
Precisely. And because it represents such a massive pool of historical liquidity, the POC exerts immense gravitational pull on price. It acts as the ultimate magnet.
And then surrounding that POC is the value area.
Right. Mathematically, the value area calculates the band containing roughly 70% of the profile's total traded volume.
Kind of operating like one standard deviation in a bell curve.
Exactly like that. This band defines the accepted fair value range for that specific session. And you highlight its edges. The upper boundary is marked as the VAH, the value area high.
And the lower boundary is the VAL, the value area low.
You got it.
So the value area represents the core battlefield. But what about those specific structural formations inside and outside of it?
You mean the clusters and gaps you mentioned earlier?
Yeah, the fat clusters and thin gaps on the map.
Yeah.
How do these different zones dictate how order flow physically behaves when price approaches them?
So those zones are your nodes. The fat clusters are high volume nodes, or HVNs.
Yeah.
These are areas where immense two-way business was transacted. Because so much historical volume is parked there, HVNs act as thick structural support and resistance.
So price gets bogged down there.
Very bogged down. To push price through an established HVN requires a massive sustained influx of aggressive directional market orders. You have to literally chew through all the passive resting limit orders defending that zone.
Right. And conversely, the thin gaps are low volume nodes or LVNs.
Exactly. Price flew through these specific price levels so rapidly that very little two-way auctioning actually occurred.
They sprinted right through the valley.
Yeah, they represent areas of rejection or aggressive imbalance where one side completely overwhelmed the other, leaving a vacuum in their wake.
Okay, so we have the map. But traditional technical analysis drills it into our heads from day one. If the NQ rallies into a massive historical resistance line on a daily chart, you blindly sell it.
Right, the classic fade.
Yeah. So if price probes the top of our topographical map, and I see this new volume, what you call acceptance building, right at that historical resistance, my instinct is still to short it because the line is there.
And that instinct is going to blow up your account.
Why? I mean, shouldn't the historical resistance hold?
It will blow up your account because you are actively stepping in front of a structural repricing of the asset.
Okay, break that down.
Acceptance occurs when price breaks out of established value and immediately begins building massive volume at the new higher levels. The speed of this volume accumulation is the critical tell.
So we're talking lightning speed here.
Yes. You might see the NQ transact as much volume in 15 minutes in this new upper zone as it did in the previous 8 hours of consolidation below.
Wow. So both the bid and the offer are aggressively refreshing.
Exactly. And when you short into that fresh acceptance, you are literally betting against the institutional consensus.
Because that rapid build of volume indicates larger players aren't taking profits.
Right. They are not using that historical resistance level to exit. They are actively absorbing the passive sell liquidity to establish new aggressive long exposure.
And once that absorption is complete,
the trap shorts, the retail traders fading that arbitrary resistance line, they become the exact fuel that violently drives the NQ higher to the next HVN.
That makes perfect sense for acceptance. So let's flip the scenario. What does the order flow look like when that probe outside of the value area is actually failing?
Well, if building thick volume means the market accepts the new price, a failure to build volume is your signal that a reversal is imminent.
That's rejection, right? And it manifests as vanishing volume.
Yes, vanishing volume. The market initiates a directional impulse attempting to auction higher outside the VAH. But as price extends outward, the volume profile gets progressively thinner.
So the auction becomes entirely one-sided.
Entirely. The bid stops stepping up and the aggressive buying dries up. There is no interaction, no two-way trade.
It's just a hollow move.
A completely hollow move that lacks the foundational order flow required to sustain itself.
So it's kind of like pulling a heavy rubber band away from its center. Mm. The further you stretch price away from that fat POC without any new volume coming in to anchor the move, the more violently it's going to snap back.
That is the exact mechanical reality of it. When you see vanishing volume on an excursion outside the value area, you are watching a lack of interest from the opposing side.
And is that engineered?
Very often, yes. Larger players will sit back and let the aggressive retail order flow push the market into a thin liquidity vacuum.
And then they trap them.
Exactly. Once the retail momentum exhausts itself in that thin air, the large players step in with massive passive iceberg orders, large hidden limit orders that refresh automatically every time they're filled to abruptly shut off the advance.
And because absolutely no structural volume was built to support the excursion,
the market inevitably snaps violently back into the established dense value area.
Wait, if a hollow move leaves near zero volume behind, it's essentially creating a structural vacuum on the chart. What happens to that vacuum the next day?
The market doesn't ignore it, if that's what you're asking.
So it comes back.
Absolutely. The market is an auction, and an auction inherently seeks to repair inefficiency. This introduces the concept of magnets.
Okay, the magnets.
You must differentiate between a fresh LVN and an old LVN. A fresh LVN, created today right behind a strong breakout impulse, acts as your structural backstop.
That's the ledge where you position yourself with the trend.
Right. But yesterday's unfilled LVN is a completely different beast. It is the ultimate magnet of the trading day.
How reliable is that magnet?
The statistical probability here is staggering. The market will return to fill yesterday's unfilled LVNs roughly 7 times out of 10.
The 7 out of 10 rule.
Yes. Any structural anomaly left behind from a previous session must be explicitly marked on your charts because the market abhors a vacuum.
I really want to know the why behind that statistic. Why does the market come back to repair these specific anomalies with such high probability?
It's all about liquidity.
Is it algorithmic mean reversion programs deliberately targeting these levels, or is it purely mechanical?
It is entirely mechanical, driven by the physics of liquidity provision. An LVN represents an untested bridge.
An untested bridge. Okay.
During the initial violent one-way move that created the LVN, liquidity was aggressively pulled from the book. Market makers widened their spreads to protect themselves from adverse selection.
Basically pulling their resting orders so they don't get run over by toxic informed flow.
Exactly. But once the aggressive momentum of that initial move finally exhausts itself, the market begins to drift.
And because there's no historical structural support within that LVN.
Right. There are no trapped participants defending their break-off prices, no resting defense on the DOM. There is nothing to arrest the drift.
So price simply slides back through the vacuum.
It slides right through until it hits the nearest dense block of historical volume. Algorithmic execution certainly accelerates the slide once the vacuum is breached, but the underlying cause is the structural void itself.
That mechanical slide sets up one of the most reliable structural patterns in order flow trading, the concept of lost volumes, or what's known as the A setup.
It's a beautiful setup.
Walk us through the exact step-by-step mechanics of it. Let's say we are looking at the ES. What is the sequence of events that creates this specific entry?
The sequence requires absolute precision. First, you have an established thick value area. The ES has been consolidating and building volume.
Okay, we have our balance.
Suddenly, the value area shifts, lower price breaks down through the VAL and drops, say, 15 points. But instead of initiating a new trend, the market actively rejects those lower prices.
So the bid thickens, absorption occurs.
Exactly. The ES begins to rotate, establishing a temporary lower balance. Finally, the aggressive buyers step back in, and the market launches back up in a violent one-way auction.
To test the original upper volume cluster.
Right.
And what happens the exact moment price re-enters that original volume cluster?
The bottom edge of that old block, usually the previous VAL or a prominent lower HVN, instantly transforms into an impenetrable wall of support.
Because the market has aggressively repudiated the lower prices.
Yes, they committed immense capital to reclaiming those lost volumes. The participants who were trapped short during that temporary lower balance are now forced to cover.
Which just adds explosive buying pressure.
Right. So when price pulls back to retest the threshold of that reclaimed value, you have a highly asymmetric, structurally defended entry point for a long position. The risk is clearly defined just below that threshold.
Recognizing that setup, though, implies we actually know what phase the market is in. Knowing the A setup is useless if you try to execute it in the wrong environment.
That is a critical point. The profile's shape dictates the strategy.
So how do we approach a D profile? I'm picturing a profile that is perfectly symmetrical, fat in the middle at the POC, and tapering off evenly at the extremes.
A D profile indicates perfect two-way balance. The market is ranging.
So neither side has the aggression to initiate a trend.
Exactly. Both buyers and sellers are entirely comfortable transacting at the POC. In a D profile, your sole objective is to trade the rotational extremes back toward the center.
So you do not trade breakouts?
Never. You wait for price to probe the VAH or VAL, verify that the excursion exhibits vanishing volume, and you fade it.
And take profits where?
Crucially, you must take your profits aggressively at the opposite edge of the value area. If you buy a rejection at the VAL, your absolute target is the VAH.
So you don't hold runners.
Do not let a trade breathe inside a rotational D profile. Holding for a larger macro breakout in a strictly rotational environment ensures you will give your unrealized profits directly back to the market.
Right. Trying to trade a breakout in a D profile is exactly like pulling that rubber band. You are just stretching price away from fair value, and eventually it snaps back in your face.
Precisely.
But let's contrast that with a trend profile, which typically looks like a capital P or a lowercase b.
The dynamics there are completely reversed.
So if the market has violently auctioned higher, leaving a thin LVN stem at the bottom, and is now building a fat value area at the top, a classic P profile, the strategy flips.
Correct. In a trend profile, fading the extremes is technical suicide.
You have to position with a directional flow.
Yes. Specifically, stepping in at the fresh LVNs left behind the breakout candles to join the trend. But the window for this specific statistical edge is highly finite.
Because profiles evolve.
Exactly. You must constantly monitor the shape. Once the new upper extreme stops building volume, the momentum stalls, and that P profile begins to fatten and morph back into a symmetrical D profile.
The trend phase is officially exhausted.
We have returned to balance. Your with trend entries immediately lose their edge.
Which brings us to the macro session handoffs. This is where I see traders get absolutely chopped to pieces.
It's brutal if you don't understand the context.
We will see a perfectly structured, beautiful trend profile meticulously established during the European London hours. But the moment the 9:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. Open hits, that structure is frequently obliterated.
Yes, routinely destroyed.
Break down the actual order flow mechanics of that transition. Why does that specific influx of American capital so consistently invalidate the structural profile that was built over the previous 6 hours?
It comes down to sheer capital density and entirely divergent institutional mandates.
Okay.
The European session, particularly in the ES and NQ, operates on a fraction of the liquidity of the US session. The structural levels and volume nodes built during those European hours are only valid for that specific thin liquidity environment.
So a 50-lot market order might move the ES 2 points during London.
Right. But at 9:30 a.m. Eastern, you have an injection of multiples of capital. You have an entirely different institutional participants entering the market simultaneously.
Executing completely different daily mandates.
Yes. They are deploying massive VWAP algorithms, volume-weighted average price programs designed to execute thousands of contracts over set time intervals.
So the volume transacted in the first 30 minutes of the U.S. Open routinely eclipses the entire European session.
Easily.
Meaning the European limit orders sitting at the VAH defending the trend essentially don't stand a chance against that flow.
They are swallowed instantly. A U.S. institution dumping 5,000 contracts over 10 minutes will effortlessly chew through the thin, resting liquidity of the European session, forcing price into a structural void.
The sheer tonnage of U.S. order flow overpowers the map.
Which is exactly why it is an absolute non-negotiable rule to protect European session profits. You dynamically tighten trailing stocks or flatten your positions entirely before the opening bell of the U.S. session.
Because you cannot overlay a low liquidity map onto a high liquidity environment and expect the boundaries to hold.
You just can't.
So let's talk about the integrity of the data we use to actually draw these maps. There is a massive reliance in the retail trading space on tick charts.
Oh, the tick chart myth.
Right. The prevailing argument is that on a hyper-fast tape like the NQ, reacting instantly to a macro CPI data release, tick charts process faster and offer a distinct speed advantage over pure volume charts.
It's fundamentally flawed. The assumption that tick speed equates to structural insight is just wrong. You have to understand how the data is constructed.
Walk us through it.
A tick chart records a new visual print every time a set number of transactions occur, completely regardless of the actual size of those transactions.
Wait, regardless of size?
Yes. One single tick could represent a retail trader buying one micro NQ contract. The very next tick could represent an institutional algorithm executing a 500-lot block trade.
So on a tick chart, those two vastly different events carry the exact same visual weight.
They both generate one unit of data.
So it's measuring the frequency of transactions, not the actual weight of the capital being deployed.
Exactly. If a massive iceberg order absorbs 1,000 contracts in just 10 rapid-fire ticks, a tick profile will barely register the event as a minor blip.
But if 100 retail traders nervously fire off one-lot market orders over a minute,
a tick profile will draw a massive, incredibly misleading volume node. Tick account profiles severely distort the topographical map. They show you transaction frequency, which is just noise.
To see where the actual institutional money is positioned, you must use real traded contract volume.
You need to know exactly how many individual contracts exchanged hands at a specific price. Furthermore, that volume ideally needs to be split by the bid and the ask.
So you can read the CVD.
Yes, the cumulative volume delta. The CVD tracks the net difference between aggressive market buyers lifting the offer and aggressive market sellers hitting the bid.
Without actual contract volume and delta, you are essentially flying blind.
You really are.
And that critical distinction directly feeds into the most common catastrophic pitfall in profile trading. Blindly trading computed lines.
Yeah, drawing the VAH, the VAL, and the POC and just assuming they're magic.
Exactly. These are mathematically derived vectors based on historical data.
Yeah.
But if the ES initiates a violent impulse that cleanly slices straight through the entire value area from the VAH all the way down through the POC and out the bottom of the VA,
traders will still throw blind buy limit orders at the VAL simply because the line is drawn on their screen.
Right. Why is that so dangerous?
Because the map is not the territory. Those levels are areas of interest, not magical force fields. Trading them blindly without analyzing the real-time order flow, the CVD, and the price action context at the exact moment of intersection, it renders the entire methodology meaningless.
So if you see unbroken aggressive momentum slicing through the core of the profile,
that is a glaring real-time warning sign that the macro context has shifted. The historical value area is being structurally abandoned by the participants.
Throwing a limit order in front of that momentum because a line told you it was support is basically acting as liquidity provision for the institutions running you over.
That's exactly what it is.
It all comes back to subjectivity versus objectivity. The deadliest phrase a retail trader can ever utter is, It's been falling for so long, it has to turn around here.
A purely emotional response based on subjective fatigue?
Yeah, it has zero basis in analytical execution. The entire purpose of shifting from time-based volume to the volume profile is to surgically remove that emotional hope and replace it with objective, quantifiable facts.
Exactly. The profile maps precisely where value lives, where the structural anomalies lie, where trades are structurally defended, and exactly where they are technically forbidden.
And that objective framework scales perfectly across any time frame, right?
It does. The underlying mechanics of acceptance, rejection, and value transition operate identically, whether you're tracking the intraday session handoff from Asia to Europe to the US, or building massive swing profiles on weekly and monthly charts.
Because the auction logic remains identical.
Yes, because human behavior and liquidity provision remain identical. The profile will never produce simple green and red buy or sell arrows. It produces the operational map.
It is entirely up to the practitioner to read the real-time flow as price navigates that map.
Exactly.
Which leaves us with a stark reality check. When you look at the sheer granularity of order flow data available to institutional proprietary desks, and compare it to retail traders trying to execute standard technical analysis off chronological volume bars, you have to ask, how much capital is completely incinerated on a daily basis by traders trying to impose their own subjective time-based biases onto the market, rather than simply reading the objective map of where institutional money has already committed its capital? For those who actually want to map the NQ and the ES correctly, the Motive Wave Anchored Volume Profile Study computes these exact structural ranges using real tick data, bid-ask splits, and dual anchors. You can dive deeper into the precise mechanics of these setups at wickflow.com.